because I just really didn't recognise myself and I cried every day.
She was so open in this episode about the struggles she's faced being a founder and being a mother, and also her really tough experiences during pregnancy. You pitching 7 days after birth. I can't even imagine.
I worked all day, all night. We've got an investor call. And they're like, oh, how old is he? I'm a week old now. They're like, oh, that's cute. Okay, so let's get into it. It's a myth that you can have it all. I just don't think you can have it all of the time. You don't always do the school run, but then you feel guilty that you're not doing the school run and they finish school in the middle of the day.
We expect women to be at home as if they don't have a job and expect people to be at their job as if they don't have children.
My learnings are that I couldn't really get the help in the time that I needed it. It was really hard. It was really hard.
Do you mind talking about what made it so tough? What is up and welcome to this episode of Working Hard, Hardly Working. Today, I am so excited to be talking to Laura Jackson. Laura's professional biography is honestly one of the most extensive I have ever read. She is a prime example of how to ace a non-linear career path by saying yes to opportunities that feel right. From hosting Take Me Out the Gossip to writing cookbooks and now founding Glassette, which is kind of known as the Net-a-Porter for homeware, which had a Christmas pop-up in Selfridges, Laura is the ultimate plate juggler, and that's without adding her 3 kids and a recent funding round into the equation. I'm such a fan of the business she's built at Glassette, and she was so open in this episode about the struggles she's faced along the way, not just with the realities of being a founder, but also with being a founder and being a mother, and also her really tough experiences during pregnancy. And I felt like that was just such an incredibly honest and open conversation, and you could tell how from the heart it was. And I feel like these conversations are so important to have so that it's clear how many people go through this and how much everything you see online is really kind of, I mean, we all talk about it being highlight reel. It's such a cliche, but it really, really is, especially when it comes to looking at people who are definitely kind of by definition doing it all. I just thought it was a really important conversation to have, and I cannot thank Laura enough for being so open about it. If you did like this episode, please make sure to like and subscribe. It hugely helps the podcast. Please make sure to let us know which types of guests you like, what you want to hear more of, what you want to hear less of, but only if you're nice and polite. And as always, we would absolutely love to hear from you. It helps us to make the podcast better and better and just have conversations that you want to hear. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
I'm very excited to have you here. We've already had a little bit of a teaser of a conversation. I just want to get straight into, right at the beginning, your early life, your childhood. What were you like as a child?
Oh gosh, probably very cheeky, right. I think. Yeah. I feel like whenever anyone ever asks this, I can't ever really remember because it was just really chaotic. I was one of 5 in a split family. And there was always lots going on. My mum was brilliant in terms of like always having an activity for us to do. So yeah, it was a busy start.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And yeah, in Huddersfield and constantly busy, loved being busy. As in like finding things to do. So like crafting or drawing or running around or, you know, it's like pre-phone life. It was brilliant. It was just, we lived next door to a field in Huddersfield and by this little stream. And we just used to mess around in the stream and it's great.
I know. Isn't it so wild actually? Just like a small tangent. I heard a quote the other day of someone just saying like, as children, we used to have so much time to be bored. Like literally just to like be bored and sit there like, I literally remember sitting on the stairs at home being like, cool. Like when it was like a school holiday or something, like you'd literally just be sitting there like, so what next? Like, and then you just go out and like play picking some grass out the floor.
Yeah.
I mean, even as adults, we're constantly entertained now, like on our phones and everything.
Yeah.
But none of us, including children, have any time to be bored.
Yeah.
I feel like that must affect us so much.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the screen chat's interesting, isn't it, with the kids? But yeah, I try and create opportunities to not do things, but it's more of a thought process to get there rather than a, oh, it's everyday boredom. Yeah, I'll just go find some flowers and make a perfume for 6 hours.
Sure.
I'll try and sell it to people for 50p.
That's so out there. We would literally like look at the CD rack and be like, it's going in alphabetical order.
Yeah,
like that's what's being done right now. Did you always have big dreams? Like, did you always think, I want to be on TV? What were your aspirations?
I loved telly as a kid. Like, I love telly. I love telly now. I love how it makes me feel. I love the escapism. I'm dyslexic, so reading was never something that I enjoyed because I found it quite difficult.
Right.
I loved imagining things when I did read books, but I got so much out of telly, but I didn't really understand that there were jobs in telly, if that makes sense.
Right.
Like, I knew there was actors and I knew that there was presenters, but I didn't really understand the mechanics of, you know, like there's people working in on like the production and the logistics, and I didn't really know about that because I couldn't see it and I didn't really know anyone that did that. So I always knew that I'd love telly, and when I've spoke to people from school, they were like, you always wanted to do big things, you always want to go somewhere and do something. And so I guess I did, but I don't think I knew it, or I knew how to articulate it until I've had children of my own and I look back at that time. But I like dreaming big. It's a good place for me.
And how did that original dreaming big end up with you like getting your first jobs on TV? Like, talk to me about the beginning of your career and how it even took off.
Well, I've always had a job, right? Because I'm one of five. So my mum always said, if I'm giving you a fiver, I've lost 25 quid. I've got to give everyone a fiver.
So true.
So I've always had a job, whether it was delivering leaflets, babysitting, washing up in a pub. Like, I've always worked, right? I've had this hard work instilled in me from a very young age. Even make your bed, tidy your room. My mum's like, I'm not making five beds. You can all make your own beds, which is, I was like, that's really harsh. But now I'm like, absolutely.
Oh my God, there is no way that will not be my, like, that is going to be the full ethos. My mum's always done things she's an outsourcer. Like, we all had, it was all delegated from like day one, including her ones. Mm. So rather than like, I'm going to make five beds, it was, okay, we're here. If you want to watch TV and like want to have dinner, you've got to get all of the beds, like all of the rooms ready for bed, including things like unfolding her. Like, we had a turn down service. Like, we would literally like go upstairs and like turn on the, she had this little electric blanket, delegated from day one. It's very good tactic.
Yeah, I like
Rules 101 about running a team. She was like, I have given birth to a team of people.
Yeah. You've got to look at it that way. I mean,
she did.
I say to my daughter now, teamwork is, and she goes, dream work. And I'm like, what is wrong with me? But it's true. It's like, it's a good lesson to instill early on, for sure. Got what the question was.
No, that's fine, so have I. Oh, talking about the how you originally like first got into TV.
Oh yes, I've always had a job. My circumstances changed and we moved from Huddersfield to Leeds. My mum ended up getting sick and I studied, instead of moving away to go to university, I decided to study events management at Leeds Polytechnic. I just didn't really know what I wanted to do. So spending 4 years studying parties seemed like a great idea.
Yeah.
Then I moved to London out of my home with my mum and moved to London on my own. So then I'd always worked, but I had to really survive then. My parents have been like lovely and support me, but you know, I needed to get a job. So when I moved to London, I transferred my course for university. Then I kind of started like working, right? And I'd do anything for money in terms of, I wasn't fussy about the job. I had a job as a cleaner. I was like desperate for money. So I flyered around all the houses near where I lived and just said, I'll do anything like maintenance, cleaning. And I cleaned a lady's house, did like PR jobs where I like dressed up as a gin bottle, handing out leaflets at the train station, you know, all of the things.
Yeah.
Very early on, I knew I never wanted to have a 9-to-5. The thought of a desk with a picture of my family on, for me, never felt like it was my thing. So I liked the kind of the randomness of all of these jobs together. And I think actually that's kind of informed how I've gone on as a person. Like, at the heart of it, the foundation is like community and making people feel good, but there's lots of different like avenues and paths like come with that. So then I got a job working at Shoreditch House. It just opened and I was like, this is great. I can work 4-5 p.m. until it closed at like 3 a.m. I wasn't spending money and I was saving money. I really wanted to go to South America. And I met somebody there and I was like, I really want to work in telly. And they were like, why? And I was like, because I love telly and really bad.
Because I watch TV.
Because I watch telly, obviously. Not very good at acting. I kind of wanted to, yeah, I wanted to be a host. And that's kind of how it started. I got introduced to an agent. They sent me for an audition. I got the audition and then they managed that job for me. And it kind of just went from there. But very, very slowly, I think it's been brick by brick. For me, it's always been about kind of learning.
Mm. And what is life as a TV presenter like? For everyone who sees like the glamorous outside, can you give us a little bit of an insight into what it's like, especially at the beginning in terms of like the how regular the jobs are, like what you're actually spending the majority of your time doing, all of these different things?
It's really tough. It's really tough because I suppose it's a job where you're really putting your personality out there and that's like that is authentically you. I think from like the inception of me kind of going into that broadcast world, I always wanted to do other things around it. And I think that it, for me, I always like things that make me a more well-rounded person and try and challenge myself. So as I was doing broadcast and I was thinking about ideas and having meetings, and it felt very much that my future was potentially in the hands of other people because I was asking them for a job. And I've always done that from a very young age. That's all I've ever known, right? So having a situation where I was meeting people and asking them for a job or like, am I good enough? It didn't feel very me. So I'm like, right, what can I do that kind of takes control and creates an opportunity for myself? Yes, I can write pitch decks. Yes, I can pitch ideas. Yes, I can think about all of that kind of broadcast work. Mm. But what can I do that's ownable, that's mine? So me and a friend started a supper club and this was over 10 years ago, I can't remember. But we didn't invent the supper club, but we were very early adapters in a movement that was inviting strangers around for dinner and creating an experience. I love experiences. I love making people feel a certain way, which is why I love telly. Making people feel a certain way, whether it's broadcast or food, was really important to me. We started the supper club and then that kind of took off. We got a cookbook. We designed two ranges for Habitat. And then this whole lifestyle, food, entertaining thing came out of me. But it was always in me because I was always the waitress at home when I was helping my mum, like if friends were coming over for dinner or whatever. So being one thing 15 years ago was all people wanted, right? They wanted to put you in a box and they wanted you to be a TV presenter or a businesswoman or whatever it was. And I never felt like that. I never felt like I was one thing. And I think that it's now really accepted, as you know, right? You know, you do multiple things and it's very accepted now. Mm. But I felt like when I started, people were like, oh, sorry, what do? You're a broadcaster, but you do a supper club.
It was very much, it's like the gig economy has like gone from being, there was an unglamorousness to it in the way that like the assumption was that you couldn't make money from just one thing.
Yeah.
Therefore you weren't good enough at it. And therefore you had to like plug it with all of these other things around versus like the desirability of now of like a multi-hyphenate career of like, I'm this and this and this.
Yeah.
And it's a really interesting shift.
Yeah.
Like I think about a lot how that's changed so quickly. I think because it used to be desirable or as a sign of like the way society was seen in terms of work, it used to be seen as desirable to have one thing and be able to maintain that one thing for like 30, 40 years in terms of like a career. And that switch now in terms of like you have more freedom if you're able to decide what that looks like is a really interesting change.
Well, I think it was always acceptable for men to do multiple things, but for women it wasn't. And I think I was met with questions, I would say, in terms of what do you do and what do you want to do? But for me, it always felt comfortable to do multiple things because I felt like they were complementary to each other. You know, meeting people at a supper club and introducing people and creating a network and a community actually was empowering and important for my broadcast work.
Mm.
So it all kind of works together, I think.
And how did you find energy outside of like trying to make it in the TV industry to also be trying these other things like supper clubs? I think it's so interesting because I think that like now we have so much pressure to like monetize every hobby because they're like it's been democratized in, like, you can't monetize everything, like literally everything. Everything is content and everything is monetizable. So there's this, like, why would you do a supper club if it wasn't, like, it has to be something then that makes money. And I think that's really interesting in our, like, shift in perception of, like, how we spend our time.
I don't think like that, though.
But I agree that's the right way to think. As in, I agree that we shouldn't all think like that. But I do think there's been, like, a societal shift in moving from that way to another.
Yeah.
Was it just, like, are you one of those types of people that has, like, boundless energy in terms of, like, you spend a day doing an audition and, like, trying to get something and then you gain more energy by doing something like a supper club? Is that kind of what you're like?
I've got so much energy and I'm a very creative person. And as I say, like, I'm opportunistic, right? So if I go on holiday and I eat an amazing taco, I'm like, oh my God, I want to invite all of my friends over and make these tacos for them.
Right.
And yeah, everything has become quite transactional, which is quite sad.
Yeah.
But actually that's what you decide to do with that, right? Because I know for me, it's important that, yes, if I'm doing something for a job for a brand, it's very much about making sure they get the content and they get exactly what they need, right? It's a job, but it's about how you're making people feel, and that's not transactional. I go to events where it's so noticeable that there's a great group of people who are really present, who want to talk to you, who want to engage, who want to build relationships, who are in that moment. Yes, we take a picture, but it's actually, like, what you get from that is so much more than making it transactional and monetizing. Mm. Because that's you as a person. And that's really, like, Instagram could be gone tomorrow. TikTok shop could be gone tomorrow. Like, what's left if that all goes? You want to make sure that you've got relationships and, I don't know, that you're happy with yourself and you're a good person, not because it's you've been paid to be, right?
Yeah, of course. And I do think that there's, like, an element of it that, like, demonizes the individual for like making decisions to monetize more.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, we have been presented, like, almost a society now where if you're not taking those opportunities, then you're leaving money on the table. And therefore, whatever situation you're in, it could be better. And therefore, it is only your fault if you're not. Like, that's kind of what the economy now says, based on the fact that, like, if you could, do you see what I mean? In the way of, like, there's a kind of ethos that, like, if you could be making something out of this and you're not, then you're leaving that on the table.
I don't think that's true for everybody, though. As in, like, I don't know. Maybe we differ opinions on this. I think it's a shame, isn't it? I do totally agree. And, like, it's the world now where it's like, watch Masterclass. Why don't you want to be a billionaire? Why don't you want more for yourself? But sometimes money isn't more.
No, but that's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that because we're presented with a society that's almost, like, made up in that way, it gives us the impression that we're leaving money on the table if we're not taking every single opportunity to, like, make more of it and monetize something.
Yeah, yeah. It's such a tricky world to navigate. That is for sure.
Yeah.
But I think just always being authentic and true to yourself and doing the things that, for me, I'm like, can I go to bed at night knowing that I've made the right decision for me and my family? Is, you know, I say, I'm sure you're the same, saying no to opportunities where you don't think that if somebody offered you a lot of money to do something that you didn't believe in, you wouldn't do it because you don't believe in it. And I think that it is just so tricky now.
Yeah.
It's so tricky.
That's exactly what I mean. Like, I mean that it's very, it feels hard to navigate. Like, it feels like you're always making the wrong decision, whether it's the wrong decision for, like, an opportunity or whether it's the wrong decision for, like, your livelihood, like, whatever. Either way, it feels like there's a risk of not saying, like, yes to something or another. At that stage in your career, when you were obviously starting out and kind of trying a lot of different things and going for a lot of different jobs, what was the wildest TV job that you've had?
I did a really lovely show called World's Most Talented, where I traveled around the world for UK TV doing this talent show. That was amazing.
Amazing.
I met the most interesting people who invited me into their homes and cooked me dinner and looked after me. We went to this Romanian family's house and we'd met their daughter, who was a gymnast and she was a contortionist and she could basically fold herself up into the size of a crisp packet. They were so kind. They invited us to their house. We had dinner. They gave us this homemade vodka. They had, like, these beautiful lace tablecloths and walls just kind of full of family pictures and heirlooms. And I was like, this, I'm so lucky. This is so culturally enriching. And they didn't have a lot, but they gave us everything. And it was just such a lovely, warm experience, and we didn't capture that. We'd gone to kind of her school to see her gymnastics, but just that side of it was just amazing. That connection that we had with them, it was really great. I really loved that.
Yeah. And did you, like, having these incredible experiences and, like, being able to experience so many different things through one job, I think is, like, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Did you think that you wanted to be in TV forever? Like, when did you start making the decision to, you know, concentrate on things like design and founding a company and kind of making that move?
Well, I started my supper club not really long after I'd been in broadcast. So I think from very early on, I wasn't like, this is the one thing that I want to do.
Right.
It was kind of always a collection of things, because I like to be inspired and I like to inspire and I really like to be creative. So it all kind of fed into each other. I think when I think having children and maybe that kind of having more ownership over my career then perhaps presented more kind of like the segments of my career, as it were. But it's all, they've always kind of been the same thing. I think I've just kind of defined what they are as I've grown older and wiser, hopefully. And I'm still so young. I've still got so much to learn, but I think I'm just learning more about myself, right? And my niche and what I want to do. And I think that kind of lifestyle living, my kind of philosophy is a life well lived. I like to do things beautifully and I like to do things well. I don't like to do something with 10%. I want to choose the projects that I want to spend my time and I can be present with people and give 100% to, and making sure they look lovely and they're there to last, rather than maybe when I first started, I was like splattergun, like, I'll just do everything and see what sticks. I know exactly what I want to do now.
And where did the original idea for Glassette come from?
Well, a couple of things. One was that I love homeware. I love looking at things and I love having this emotional connection to a mug, a glass. I collect things.
Sorry, we didn't give you a nicer one.
No, it's nice.
No emotional connection there.
But I've always collected things from wherever I've gone and I love them being like a talking point, like, oh, I got it there and I bought it from this lady and she made it, all these things. So I kind of wanted to create that feeling, but online. There wasn't a marketplace doing homeware in the way that we were doing it. We wanted to be the first place that thought about content and community as well as product. Mm. So that was one reason. Another reason was I was buying lots of homeware and I felt it was really fragmented and I had like 10 tabs going, like, oh, what's that? What's that? Oh, would they look nice together? So I kind of wanted to create one place for it all. And another reason was that I had my son, and at the time I was doing supper clubs under host, and I got a legal letter from somebody telling me that they wanted me to take down my Instagram and to stop doing my supper clubs. And I was really upset because I was like, I've built this out of community. I've built this because I love people and I love bringing people together. Mm. I'm a really good connector. Anyone will say, if you ever want to meet someone or get connected or knows, like, ask Laura, she'll send you the email for the table that you want to get booked or whatever. Like, I just love people. It's really important to me. And I was so like, wow, why would someone do this? Why wouldn't someone try and get my telephone number and call me?
And was it like a trademark type violation thing or like a...
Yeah, kind of a you're stepping on my toes sort of thing. And,
right.
And I was like, oh, I really don't understand that.
We can all have supper.
No, but I was doing food, so.
Right, but also, yeah, like there's so much space.
There's so much space. And for me, I'm like, make friends, let's do things together, right? But and I was really upset. I just had a baby. And I was like, but all I want to do is for people to be friends and to create community, and someone's trying to like take me down, basically. Also, I'm like, what do I do with a legal letter? I'm
right, like, sure, like, logistically, where do we go from here?
Yeah, I'm like, Google, I've just had this letter and there's no way in that space that I don't even understand. So I was really like, oh, okay, well, what And then it kind of flipped in a way. And I was like, well, what can I do to empower as many people as possible? Mm. What can I create where I feel like I can make people never feel like this? I want to create a big community, right? Let's start in the UK, but let's build it out as a big community where people feel welcome, where people feel accepted, where people can share ideas and opinions. And that was another reason why I wanted to build Glassette. So they were like the three
very good reasons.
Yeah, three pillars.
And did it start as a kind of side hustle type thing? Did you think it was going to become a kind of full-blown business as it is?
I wanted it to be a big business right from the very beginning. Mm. I know that it will be, and I'm so passionate about it. For me, success comes from passion. Success is so subjective. It means different things to different people. But for me, it was about creating a community where I could help them with a life well lived. That's like my saying for everything, life well lived. And so I wanted to create a life well lived for lots of different people and for two customers, right? The brands and the people that were buying from us. So yeah, I want it to be a really big business. And I'm like, I just must have been a crazy person because I worked all day, all night. Like I was getting up at like 4:30 a.m. and working until the baby got... I was like just worked. Mm. I had a really good network of people because I was writing for Elle Decoration and I love interiors and I love chatting to people. So I just got loads of brands and said, this is what I want to do. I've not got a deck yet, but I promise it's going to be great. And they were like, well, we know whatever you'll do it with love and passion and care and honesty. And I was like, okay, this is great. And that kind of gave me a bit of a like, oh, yeah, okay. So we're really doing this, right?
Yeah.
And I went to my brother-in-law who worked with John and Christian at End. And he was a buyer. He was a buyer there and he really understands product. And I said, I've got this idea that is kind of like a not on the high street meets a Cherish, meets a kind of Food 52. It's empowered by community and content and product. And he was like, I would love to do this with you. So we did that together and we just... Yeah, I honestly don't know. We just worked and grafted and I don't know a single thing about business. I studied events management at university. I basically just, I look for the light and I work hard.
Mm. And just keep on pushing.
Keep going.
The next thing.
Keep going.
I think that's so valuable because I also think that it's like, it's so intimidating and yeah, it's so easy to think like, there's so many steps to get there. And it's like, yeah, there are so many steps to get there, but there's one right in front of you and then there's one tomorrow and then there's one the day after and you can maybe make two one day if you'd like really push. And it is just like, I've had so many people on this podcast who've literally said like, I walked down the street and I went into a shop and I asked them this and like, that's how I got my answer and that's how I found this person. And it really is, it's just about movement. Like it's just about like pushing and trying the next thing, throwing a few things at the wall.
Yeah.
A few of them don't stick, but one of them does.
Yeah.
And like that kind of perseverance, not needing to know it all. I feel like there's so much... It's so easy to get terrified by the fact that there are all of these steps and the fact that you don't know everything.
Mm, yeah, totally. And it's really important not to know everything or not to think that you know everything because you don't. Like it's so important to be open and vulnerable to learn. Like curiosity is so important. And we don't always have as much time as we would like, but kind of trying using our time as effectively as possible, which I'm sure that you agree. It's like so hard to balance everything. But I think having integrity and just hard work, it is hard work. And I, you know, this kind of like whole like live, work, balance, juggle thing. I'm trying to figure that out in my head at the moment because I really like working. It's not horrendous, as in I really enjoy the work that I do and I feel so lucky that I do. Some days are much harder than others, but I think having that passion is important.
Mm, no, absolutely. And I think it's, you know, in a world where we do have to work, like pretty much all of us have to work, creating something that whether it's the job itself or whether it's the people you work with or whether it's the type of work you do, like physically problem solving or whatever it might be. I do think there's a lot to be said for in the world where we all have to work for the ability to create something about what you're doing that you enjoy, whether that is like the overall job itself or whether it's like, it doesn't need to be that you feel like there's a for a lot of people, it will be that there's like a greater purpose, and that is a huge privilege, and that is, you know, a great place to be. But also even just like the people you work with, or the way you work, or the problem solving you're doing, or like the ability to go there every day and come home and like be paid for having to interact, for having interacted with like interesting people.
Yeah.
I think it's such a, I mean, there's so much to be said for it, and it's such a privilege to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Massively.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Obviously, homeware retail is famously quite saturated. Like, there are lots of brands that have been and gone. There are lots of brands in the space. There's lots of noise in the space.
Yeah.
Why do you feel like Glassette struck a chord and was able to kind of cut through that noise?
Well, I mean, we're a tech business. We are a platform. We sell product, but we don't own anything. So it's it's quite different in the way that it's set up. But what we do is we curate. So our USP is curation and the brands that we have on and the meaning behind those brands and how we can communicate those brands with our customers. And I think it's contextualizing everything and giving product meaning. It's not about just sell. It's about why do we don't need more things. But it's about creating this life well lived. It's about the emotional connections to things, right? It's about making people feel good. It's about adding joy to people's lives. I get joy from glassware and curtains and wallpaper, and turns out lots of other people do too.
Yeah.
So I think that that's why we've struck a chord, and we're accessible, and we have a great tone of voice, and we really love our customers. We are still kind of, you know, early stages. We've just had our second birthday and we're still very much learning. I mean, we have got such big, exciting ideas, and I'm sure, like Tali, you know, lots of people come to you with lots of ideas and collaborations and partnerships. So it's just figuring out, it's consumerism, but I want it to be thoughtful. That's really important. So it is brick by brick. It's step by step. It's building a business that's going to last. And every decision is really important. Every decision is really thought about. And maybe people, that resonates with people. Maybe people can, I don't know, there's like an undertone that people get from the way that we talk about things. We talk about product, the way that we do our editorial, the way that we talk to our customers. It kind of, it's important, right? It's, you're building a brand. As you know, you're not just selling products.
Right.
I think that that's the difference.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that brand is what means that someone, you know, they might have bought one product from you and like it, but actually that's the thing that's going to get them coming back again and again and season after season when they're thinking, oh, do you know where I found something really great last time? It is like, there is so much, you know, obviously social media is incredibly powerful, but that curation thing that you were talking about in terms of like how someone is able to come to your site and not just, it's not just shopping. Like, it's not just about buying something, acquiring a new piece of something. Yep. It's about the like taste making process and the journey and like understanding like, oh, is it this one I want or this one I want? And that kind of curated approach to homeware, I do think like is so, you know, anyone can log on to a site that's made by one company and it's kind of, you know, that's what they're selling this season.
Yeah.
But actually having that emotional connection, that kind of decision making behind why that is part of your not inventory because you don't have inventory, but like,
well, it's about discovery, it's about inspiration, it's about looking at things that make you feel good. And you don't have to buy first time, but you'll come back because you know that's a space that makes you feel good. And that's really important to me. Again, how does it make people feel? So important. And we've got such amazing ideas. Oh my God, I just wish I could tell you like what we're doing next, because it's just so great. And I think I'm such an ideas person that it's really exciting. And I think that kind of energy hopefully comes through with the business and through our kind of socials and our newsletters and our editorial. So yeah, I think, I'm so excited about the business. I mean, it's a whole thing having a business and being a founder, but it's something that I really love it.
And how was, you raised 1.2 million in funding?
Yeah, so we raised 1.2 first round, and we're doing like a rolling close with this next round, which has been really hard.
It's not the right landscape, as in like in terms of like the funding landscape at the moment is crazy. Like it is the most insane. I've heard every single founder talking about like how unbelievably tough it is at the moment. What's the aim with this next fundraise?
It is to, well, I can't totally tell you because it would be giving our kind of strategy away, but it's to just supercharge the business, to get more people knowing, shopping.
And let's talk about, you've spoken openly before around, you know, being a mother and being a founder and kind of how, obviously you founded Glacier after, you know, you kind of already had children, but how have you found that journey? I can imagine there were certain things that are more flexible because it's your business, but also certain things that the business doesn't wait when it needs to, you know, have some issues. How have you found that?
I find juggling and balance something that I'm trying to get to grips with, I guess. My baby is 8-9 months, I should know. And having a business, being a founder is tough, and I don't do it on my own. And I think sometimes the misconception is when you see people's, you know, daily situations on Instagram, you might think, oh, it's this or it's that, but it's chaotic. But I thrive in chaos, but I can't do everything, as you know, you can't do everything all of the time. And I think it's a myth that you can have it all. I just don't think you can have it all of the time. I feel like I'm going in a very roundabout way of saying that. I'm figuring it out right now. I'm very lucky that I have a co-founder who is in the business every single day. I think about the business every minute of every day, every second. I have a notepad by my bed, and I usually wake up in the night and write down notes. Or if I see something, I've got, you know, files on my phone and on my computer for inspiration and whatever. So it's always in my head. But the other things that I do feed into the business, so I have to make sure that I have time for everything. I just have to be disciplined, I think. But yeah, I'm trying to figure it out.
And what have been your biggest learnings recently in terms of that kind of figuring it out? Like the best way to, I mean, I completely agree. You can have it all, but you can't have it all at once. Like you've got to, it's going to be give and take.
Yeah. I think my learnings coming into a new year are that I want to be more thoughtful about the decisions that I make, and I don't have to do everything all of the time. Usually I'll write like a 12-month plan, but actually this year my plan is 18 to 24 months. My plan is to be slower about things. It's not about shouting the loudest. It's not about like launching in 10 brands a day. Right. Like people, I want to be more thoughtful. I want to be slow. I want to build brick by brick, so I've got something that lasts in every sphere of my life. And that kind of hopefully will free more time. So when I do the school run, and which I don't, by the way, I have help with the children.
Right.
Because can't do everything all of the time, and they finish school in the middle of the day.
I know. What is that about? Because actually that's one of the things that has been, is the biggest shock coming into adulthood. You remember that children finish school at 3.
Yeah, 3:30, yeah.
What is that about?
9 till 3:30.
How does anyone deal with that?
I know,
with
it's kids? Really hard. And people, it's perhaps tricky because we don't, as women, always want to be like, oh, we don't want to talk about these things. But then we're like, why aren't we talking about these things?
Right.
Again, it's trying to figure out the balance and kind of taking down the mask of the, well, you do have someone that helps you with childcare. You have to. Or you don't always do the school run, but then you feel guilty that you're not doing the school run, or you're on the school run sending a quick email, or, you know.
But the school run is after you need to be on the way to work. And finishing school is before you need to be coming home from work. Yeah. Like, I truly don't know how anyone does it. And one of my, like, most formative experiences with the fact that, like, I've always had a mum who, like, works very, very hard, has always been very, like, career-driven. Mm. And I remember I used to be so jealous of all of the people who, like, saw their parents in the evenings. Mm. And first of all, I think it was the best thing that it's taught me so much. Mm. So, like, anytime I'm speaking to people who, I remember I had someone on the podcast who's a female founder, and she was like, are they going to hate me forever? And I was like, it's the best thing that, like, ever happened to me.
Yeah.
And I do think that, like, how on earth else would it work? Like, it's so, I don't know, we have such poor provisions for mm-hmm. women in work.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have such high expectations, and we expect women to be at home as if they don't have a job, and expect people to be at their job as if they don't have mm-hmm. children.
Mm-hmm.
And we ask women in interviews whether they have children or whether they're thinking about having children, exactly because we don't think we have enough things in place to make them still be able to do their job properly.
Mm.
And it's like, that's so loaded
yeah.
and tough. Yeah. And like, when you think about it, we really only are like 70 years into it being acceptable for any woman to have jobs anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My worst thing is when people say busy mum. I've really, 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 really... we're not allowed to say hate in our house. I always say to my daughter, don't say hate, just say you don't like something. But I really don't like that phrase.
But I really would like to use the H word.
Yeah, I really would like to use the H word. But in case she's listening, she's not. She's four. Yeah,
her
really
downloading her podcast for the day.
Yeah. But yeah, you're like literally nail on the head. Yeah.
What have you found the toughest thing about being a founder and a mum?
I think it's just... I think I struggle. I'm a people pleaser to my detriment, and I think that I just always want to do the best for everybody. I want to pick up my daughter from school and be really present, but then I also really want to be in that meeting and learn about what's going on, and, you know, but you just can't be in all of the places all of the time. So I think just, I don't know. I don't know if you ever don't feel guilty. I'm not sure. Or I don't know if you just make peace with the fact that you feel guilty and that's just how you feel.
Mm.
So probably that.
And have you felt that more as you've had more children, or the other way around?
Well, I don't know, because I just fired them all out.
Sure.
Very productive. I have three under four. So I just, well, four and under. So I knew I wanted three children. And I used to be a nanny for my friend's... twin, and she had three girls, and I just loved them so much. So from then I was like, right, I'd like to have three. And I think I thought, maybe it's just easier to get it all out of the way, because I don't enjoy being pregnant at all.
Mm.
So I'm kind of, in a way, I feel like I'm taking everything that I've learned and everything that I've created so far, and now I'm kind of going into this year knowing that it sounds awful that I'm not, but like, it's such a privilege to be pregnant. Like, I find talking about this really difficult because I'm very torn, because it's a miracle. It is a miracle. And it's also not everybody's choice. Not everybody wants to have children. So I feel very, very, I'm grateful and I'm lucky. But I feel like maybe now I have a bit more headspace going into this year, thinking, right, like, I don't have to worry about sneezing and weeing all the time. Or actually, that's a lie, I do. But going into kind
but
of...
it's nice to see a horizon while that might not be the case.
See my pelvic floors now, can you tell? But going into it thinking more kind of work rather than working it around being pregnant.
But also, just because it's a privilege to have been pregnant and to have children, it doesn't negate your experience.
No,
and it doesn't, like, you... And I know you've spoke openly about this before and, you know, how challenging... your third pregnancy was.
Yeah.
And that will have been so valuable to so many people to hear. And like, there is, we talk about mum guilt. You've talked about mum guilt at work. There's mum guilt around pregnancy. There's like, you're carrying so much and so much expectation to also love it and be excited at every time and to feel grateful. And like, you can be inherently grateful and hold gratitude and still have had a really fucking tough pregnancy.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely. I think, it was not a fun time for sure.
And what, do you mind talking about what made it so tough?
Well, I can't really pinpoint, it's not like a, I don't think you can pinpoint one thing. I think it's just, you don't do anything. Your body's doing it. And can you imagine how hard your body is working without you doing anything? And you don't really understand what's going on, because sometimes you can have a good pregnancy, sometimes you can have a bad pregnancy. And I think I'd had a good one, an okay one, and then a really bad one. Mm. And every day was just a struggle. Every day, I feel I can't talk about it. It makes me upset. It was really hard. It was really hard. But I think I'm somewhat of a like, it's fine. But I think it was just it was a real struggle, because I just really didn't recognise myself, and I cried every day. Mm. And I'm quite an optimist. So yeah. To feel like reduced to not really understanding why I felt a certain way was quite difficult. And it's really hard on the NHS, because there's so many people that need help. So when they do refer you, because they're like, well, because postnatal depression is spoken about so often, but antenatal depression isn't really spoken a lot, and you can't, you've got a bit of you're on the timeline, right? You've got the date when the baby's coming in and around, and yeah, I couldn't really get the help in the time that I needed it. So I was like, just trying to do things to, I don't know, I guess make myself feel better. But then the baby came, and it was so much, I felt like a weight had lifted off me. It's hard, isn't it? I've never felt that low before, so it came out of nowhere, really. So I don't know, just trying to manage it, I guess.
Yeah, no, but I can't even imagine, like, the, because one of the things we obviously have to carry as women, and we can say all of this with an underlying, like, it is a huge privilege to have children and to get pregnant and all of these things.
Mm. Which is why I find it hard talking about it.
Of course, but like, at the same time, your experience is so real and it's so important. And there will be so many people who actually, just as you've said, like, feeling confused and not knowing where it's come from and not knowing how to fix it. Like, there will be so many people that feel that way. And we've, for so long, we've, first of all, we use gratitude as like a weapon with which to like kind of smack women back into place in terms of those things, even between us.
Yeah.
Like, it, there is this expectation that we should be carrying it so gratefully that actually, you know, why complain? But also it's not about complaining. It's about the fact that you had a really tough experience. Mm. And just because it was something to do with nature, it doesn't mean that it's any less important than if you had a tough experience going through grief or going through like a really terrible time at work or just depression as a whole. Like all of that must have been so much for your body at the same time as you also don't know what's happening next. And you're also carrying all of this expectation that you need to be as healthy as possible so that there's nothing wrong with your child as well. Yeah. Like, that is, I can't even imagine how much that would have been to carry and to make it through each day whilst also still feeling happy and grateful and positive about the future. Like, where does it stop?
And then going, having the baby and then going straight into a fundraiser for 7 months and being oh, okay, hi.
I can't even imagine.
Do you know what was the worst thing? It's like, oh, we've got a, like an investor call, and then they're like, oh, you had your baby. I'm like, yeah. Oh, here's the baby. Oh, like, oh, how old is he? I'm like, oh, I think he's... seven weeks, he's a week old now. They're like, oh, that's cute. Okay, so let's get into it. And I'm like, and I kind of, it didn't feel as challenging as the pregnancy, because the pregnancy was not enjoyable. And I really felt a bit like, as you just saw, like, it was just hard. Mm. So going into that, I was like, oh, well, it doesn't feel as, at least I feel like I've got a bit of my brain back. But that was, I mean,
that is a comedy sketch. Like, that is literally like a skit. But like, you pitching 7 days after.
It's like this, like birth. This on my, so that no one could see like anything from below my face. I think, I, yeah, yeah. I just, at the, like, again, it's how do you talk about, sometimes I'm like, how do you talk about fundraising as well on a platform or a podcast or your Instagram? Like really, like the, sometimes it's conversations that are kind of say with your friends where you can just be like,
No, I know, because you've got an audience and you've got maybe the audience of the fund, like the funds. You've right. got like, you know, it's also a niche conversation and like all of these different things. Mm-hmm. But again, it's like your reality. And yeah. it is like when you listen to that as a human and like what you went through and what you've been going through, when you listen to that as a human, take away any expectation of like, oh, but they should be grateful about this and you should be grateful that you have a business mm-hmm. and you should go, like all of these different things. When you listen to that as a human, you see how tough that was. You yeah. see how like what you had to go through and all of these things. And mm-hmm. so like there is a lot of validity to that as an like as an experience and something that is crazy. Like it is crazy that you were on funding calls 7 days after mm. like birth and that you felt like that was better as well. But like that was easier than the previous 7 days or like yeah. than 7 days before that. Like yeah. you're incredible and to have done that and to, I don't know, I just can't even imagine like what that all would have been like mm. and to the outside as well. I think it also goes to show like how much, you know, everyone looking at all of your beautiful things and all of like how incredible it all looks and stuff, and you know, you're doing such hard work every day. I mean that in the least, like I just heard myself say that sounds so patronizing, but like in terms of, you know, I mean, it must have been so tough.
Mm. Yeah, but I do believe in kind of like in adversity, you can thrive because, mm. again, you find the opportunities. And actually, there's some kind of avenues that we could have gone down where we could have raised a considerable amount of money from a fund. But actually, the ideas that we've had now for the business would not be there. Mm. So I think that I always look for the positive. I always try and look for the light. And I think that it's been, I always, like, I keep saying this to people. I'm like, oh my God, shut up. But 2023 was like a year of growth and learning. And I learned so much about myself. I learned so much about what is important. I learned so much about the business, so much about how to run a business. And you know, I get decision paralysis sometimes because so many people have an opinion on things. And it's just taught me how to deal with that. And you know, you're creative. In terms of food at home, right? I'm really frugal. Like I open the fridge and there's like four things in there. And John's like, oh my God, there's nothing to eat. And I'm like, yes, there is. I'll make something. He's like, how have you made, I mean, it's not great, but how have you made this out of like a really sad, very sad carrot?
Right.
And I feel like that about life. I'm like, well, okay, it's really hard. And with the funding journey, and we've spoken to this person, that person, we've emailed how many people who've not got back to us, we've had so many no's, so many doors slam in our face. But then it's like you look at the business differently, right? And you are so resilient, you're so hard, that you then think about creative ideas. And mm. and I think that's really important.
Yeah, and I do think it's true to say that, like, on that specific example with, like, funding, there is a reason why so many of the businesses that are literally given, like, 100 million on an idea end up failing because yeah. they spend so badly and yeah. they, like, pursue such, like, the ideas, you know, you don't need to be frugal. Mm. Like, we are so productive with our spend now because our budgets are, like, everyone who joins the company is, like, oh my God. And it's like, yeah, well, our margins aren't where a normal fashion business is because mm. we do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And, like, that's what's made us like be how we are and be like creative and like all of those different things.
Yeah.
If you were talking to the you at the beginning of 2023.
Oh my God, this time last year, not good.
What would you say to her?
Oh gosh, you'll get back in your jeans.
Don't you worry. Don't throw them away.
But like more as in a like, you'll get back in yourself, I guess.
I like it.
Yeah.
Metaphorical and realistic.
I'm still not back in the jeans, but I feel back in the jeans as in like I definitely feel more myself. And I keep at Christmas, I was like, I kept saying to Ron, he's like, this is my husband, and he's like, stop going on about it. But I was like, do you remember this time last year? And I was really sad. And then we walked around, and I was just like crying all the time. And he was like, yeah, because it was really hard for me as well. And you forget that
yeah.
it was really hard for everybody around me as well. I was honestly probably a very difficult person to be around because I just didn't feel like myself. So but then when John says that to me, I'm like, well, imagine how I felt in my body, not knowing myself. And then he's like, how have you made you how have you flipped the baby? This? How have you flipped this around? I'm like, I'm not sure, but it's working, right? So, I think this time last year was really, I feel like a completely different person.
Yeah. Oh,
God.
Yeah. Well, and that's on growth and that's on different seasons of life and learning. And as you said, like so much this year has been like, you do get those learnings out of the tough times, but also it'd be nice not to have them so intensely, I'm sure.
Yeah.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
I honestly think that it's in a sentence that not everybody thinks and does the same as you, and that's okay. I'll go back to like learning this. It's a lesson that I learn over and over again. Not that I don't learn the lesson, but I think that I kind of forget maybe. But just because at school you would invite somebody to your party doesn't mean that they're going to invite you to your party. Just because you invite someone to your party doesn't mean they're going to invite you to their party. That doesn't mean they think any less of you. That doesn't mean they don't love you. That doesn't mean that they aren't a great person. It's that people are different and they see things differently and they do things differently, but that doesn't make them worse or better. I think it's just understanding that people are different. I think that's really important. Like, everyone has different ways of doing things. And, you know, sometimes you get upset that a friend would do or say something. Well, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't say that. But that's okay. Just because you wouldn't or you don't or you couldn't doesn't make what they're doing less than or more than. And I think that it's a lesson that I keep learning. But I think it's a really important lesson to learn.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. In a world where we receive so many people's information in terms of what they do, like how they live their life and all of these things, being able to have that strength of self, but also strength of understanding that can work for them and that is more than fine.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that it is going to for you.
Mm-hmm.
Or that you're living your life wrong because you're not living your life with their values. Mm-hmm. Like, it can both be equally valid. And what are you most looking forward to for this year?
This sounds so cheesy, but everything. I love life. I get so excited. I love meeting people. I love doing things like this. I love going on holidays and feeling inspired, seeing, I don't know, a piece of fabric that I'm like, oh my God, let's... Like, can I do a rug collaboration and do this? Yeah, I'm really excited about everything. But I'm also excited about being more thoughtful and not thinking about things in the short term as in a 12 or a 2 years, but thinking about things longer term than that. And not in a materialistic way with tangible things, but how do I build a lasting business? How do I create friendships that are meaningful? How do I create meaningful relationships and not be just thinking about just the tomorrow, but thinking about things with a bit more kind of legacy and substance to them.
And I think that is...
Hey marketers, advertisers, and business owners, find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
This is a perfect place to end, and we will all be going for a life well lived. I feel like that's such a good saying and like motto to live by. I feel like because it ties into so many different things as well. Like, it's a different thing every day, and sometimes it is about work, and sometimes it's about life and family and like all of these different things. And thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
You've been great.